Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very warm welcome to this edition of Africa Link on Tuesday, July the 24th. I am Abubakar Jalo.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. Thank you for joining us live from our studios in Bonn, Germany.
Now coming up, 15 senators defect from Nigeria's ruling APC party, as Senate President Saraki says he could also quit.
News reaching us are saying that 13 out of them have moved to the opposition party, I mean the PDP, while two of them, one from the south and the other one from the north, have moved to a party called ADC, which is a new political party.
The humanitarian crisis in South Sudan worsens as the United States threatens further sanctions.
I appeal to the U.S. government to make sure, let them think about the humanity of the human being. And we are appealing to our government in South Sudan to go back to make a friend again with the U.S., sit down and discuss the issue.
Plus, Europe on fire. About 60 people are reported killed in wildfire in Greece. Sweden, Finland, Norway and Latvia are also fighting multiple blazes.
We will have that and much more. These stories plus also your responses on our Facebook and Twitter pages shortly after we hear what has been happening around the world.
My name is Jen Nyingi with DW News. The Democratic Republic of Congo's health ministry has declared an end to an Ebola outbreak believed to have killed 33 people. There have been no new cases for 42 days. The outbreak, first detected in April, was dealt with rapidly by the World Health Organization and Congolese authorities, including treatment with an experimental vaccine given to over 3,000 people. The UN Human Rights Office says it's concerned at the growing number of reports of voter intimidation and threats of violence ahead of Monday's election in Zimbabwe. Spokesperson Elizabeth Throssell says cases of intimidation have been reported, especially in rural areas.
We call on the authorities and political parties and their supporters to ensure that the elections are not marred by such acts, so that all Zimbabweans can participate free from fear in a credible election process.
This election will be the first since former President Robert Mugabe was removed from power, and investors are watching closely in the hope it will spark an economic revival. Now to Greece, where the government has declared 3 days of mourning over wildfires that have so far killed at least 60 people. The European Union has stepped up efforts to mobilize and coordinate the dispatch of firefighters and equipment from its member countries to fight raging fires not only in Greece, but also in Sweden and Latvia. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari's party, All Progressives Congress, has been hit by another wave of defections after 37 members of the House of Representatives joined the opposition PDP. Their defection comes after 15 senators made a similar move. This means that the main opposition People's Democratic Party, PDP, now has a majority in the Senate. The World Food Programme has been addressing the issue of drought in southern Africa, where 15.5 million people are unable to meet their basic food needs, and one-third of all children under five will never realize their full physical and cognitive potential. Tuzo Kumalo with more from South Africa.
During a press briefing in Johannesburg, David Beasley, the executive director of the United Nations World Food Programme, said that drought is the main cause of food insecurity, with conflict being a huge factor in countries like the Democratic Republic of Congo.
It's one thing to address food security with short-term food support. It's another thing to address it long-term. And this is what we're trying to do, is so that Africa doesn't need support from the outside. It's Africans helping Africans.
Experts have warned that 6 of the 9 African countries likely to be major food insecurity hotspots are in southern Africa.
And lastly, with just a few days to go before a presidential election, an airport in central Mali has been attacked by mortar rounds. No one immediately claimed responsibility, but jihadists with links to Al-Qaeda and so-called Islamic State have recently intensified deadly attacks across central and northern Mali, making some parts ungovernable. For more news and information, go to our Facebook page, DW Africa, or our website page, DW Africa. www.rfiw.com. My name is Jane Nyingi.
Well, if you're just joining us, this is DW's Africa Link program. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And my name is Abubakar Jallo. And a very warm welcome to you if you're just joining us there on our Facebook page, DW Africa. We'd like to recognize some of you guys there. We have Emeka Stephen to his writing. We'll get to your response at some point. We have Blessed Ume and Paddy Moore and a host of you guys. Thank you all. And our usual McAiden Wangang.
Yeah, thank you very much for keeping it Africa Link. We start in Nigeria, where the president of Nigeria's upper house of parliament has said his chances of leaving President Muhammadu Buhari's ruling party are very, very high. Bukola Saraki, who as Senate president is the third most senior politician in the country, made the comments after 15 senators from Buhari's All Progressive Congress APC party defected earlier today.
Now, the drama started this morning as Saraki on Tuesday escaped security forces who had laid siege to his house to prevent him and the other senators from going to the National Assembly. Ahmed Salisu from DW's Hausa Service has been telling me more about this whole saga.
Well, actually, if you look at the crop of individuals that left the APC this morning in the upper chamber of the National Assembly in Nigeria, are mainly his men, I would say. Out of the 15, you could count about four or five senators that are really very close to him. I mean, Senator Dino Melaye is well known with Saraki. Senator Marafa is there. Senator Konkose is another individual. So with these individuals, I mean, it's the chances of him moving to the opposition or any other party are very, very high. And another thing is this morning there was a siege in the Senate president's house and that of his deputy.
What do you mean by a siege at the Senate president's house?
The police sealed their residences. I mean, he had to leave the house in a rickety vehicle and then move to the National Assembly to convene the plenary this morning.
Okay, what do we know about these 15 senators who defected this morning?
Well, news reaching us are saying that 13 out of them have moved to the opposition party, I mean the PDP, while two of them, one from the south and the other one from the north, have moved to a party called ADC, which is a new political party.
And this is exactly what happened, and that's why Goodluck Jonathan lost the elections to Buhari.
Well, it's the same scenario, because during Goodluck Jonathan's time, the Speaker of the House of Assembly, the then Speaker, Aminu Waziri Tambuwal, had the same treatment. He was prevented from entering the National Assembly when they were about to elect a Speaker, and then he was made the Speaker. At the end of the day, this is exactly what cost Goodluck Abeli Jonathan his seat, because there was impunity in the party. The presidency, or those close to the president, are the one moving and shaking the tables in the country. They decide what happens and who rules and who suffers at the end of the day.
Do you see any chances of President Buhari mending ties with Saraki?
Well, at this material time, I would say the chances are really, really slim. It is not just Saraki. There are other senators. If we take Senator Rabi Musa Konkos, of course, from Kano. Kano is a swing state because of the population. Now, he has refused, to mend fences with the presidency. If Konkos did not mend fences with the presidency, there is no way Saraki can do that. It's the same thing with Senator Dino Melaye, the same thing with Senator Kabiru Marafa, and a host of other senators. So it is really difficult for the door to mend fences. Rabi Musa Konkos, of course, from Kano.
Ahmed Salisu from DW's Hausa Service.
And of course, you have been giving us a lot of responses on this. I will first welcome our listener, Magden Wagang, who says at least those 15 senators have conscience and care for their people, unlike what he says Southern Cameroon.
And then another quick one here from someone who wrote this comment saying, more senators are waiting to defect. Mark my words. That's from Chima Owe Zuko. Thank you so much there for that response. Now, let's go to some international story. Greece has declared a state of emergency around the capital, Athens, after wildfires tore through residential areas, killing at least 60 and injuring scores more. Strong winds are fanning multiple fires across the country.
Well, as you know, Greece is just the latest European country affected by wildfires this summer. Sweden, Finland, Norway and Latvia are also battling blazes of their own. This report by Jason Mutang is now presented by Sophie Mbogwa.
They are the worst wildfires Greece has seen in a decade, moving quickly and taking many by surprise. Several have died in their vehicles trying to flee. It's feared up to 100 homes have been destroyed in the coastal town of Rafina. Hundreds of firefighters and the army have been dispatched, but they are struggling to control the flames. Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras, who cut short a trip to Bosnia and returned to Athens, has declared 3 days of national in memory for those who perished in the wildfires.
We must all be in a constant state of alert. We must be unified and make an effort to face an exceptionally difficult situation for our country.
Greece has declared a state of emergency in several regions surrounding Athens. Strong winds and temperatures of up to 40 degrees continue to stoke the flames. In coastal towns, residents and holidaymakers have been evacuated by boat. Some are feared missing at sea. Chief of the National Fire Brigade, Stavrola Maliri, has asked for support from the European Union.
Due to the large expanse, the intensity and the dangers the fires pose, the country has submitted a request through the European Civil Protection Mechanism for international ground and air assistance.
Spain is sending water-carrying aircraft. Cyprus is dispatching fire crews. They will arrive too late for those who have already lost their lives and homes. The fire in Greece comes as northern European countries struggle with forest fires. Sweden, Finland, Norway and Latvia are also fighting multiple blazes.
And that report was compiled by Jason Mutag.
Now back to Africa, South Sudanese citizens have called on the U.S. government to reconsider its threat to cut financial aid to the country. In a statement released over the weekend, the White House had warned it would cut funding because the political leaders have not shown any commitment to attaining peace.
And as our DW correspondent in Juba, Simon Wakewudu, found out, the threats have sent shockwaves across locals since the U.S. government is its largest donor on humanitarian and development aid.
To many South Sudanese citizens, it's clear the United States played a key role in its independence from Sudan following 21 years of liberation war between the two countries. 45 years old Atem Peter, a resident in Juba, says a breakdown of ties between his country and the U.S. would bring more problems to ordinary citizens like him.
I appeal to the U.S. government to make sure let them think about the humanity of the human being. And we are praying to our government in South Sudan to go back to make a friend again with the U.S., sit down and cut the issue.
In her statement, White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders accused President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar of lacking commitment and doing little to bring peace in the country, a statement which the South Sudan government has termed as unfortunate. Maiwen McCall, a spokesperson of the South Sudan Ministry of Foreign Affairs, denies that accusation.
They have to come in with details here about the lack of commitment that they are talking about, because in the end, we are seeing those men are sitting together, greeting themselves together, laughing together, and demonstrating that they can work together.
Atem Simon, a resident in Juba, says Sanders' statement that U.S. would cut aid to his country should be used to pressure warring parties to sign a realistic peace deal but not be practically implemented.
For me, as a normal citizen, I urge the warring parties who are now engaging in a peace talks, I urge the international community, especially the U.S., to consider this kind of pressure as a means of reaching an agreement. But it should not be a decision made so as to cripple the efforts made by the region and the international donors like the other countries which are now supporting this initiative. Because without this agreement, I think South Sudan will be in a crossroads.
A citizen from Juba expressing concern over the U.S. move. That report was compiled by Simon Wakewudu.
And a quick one from Suleiman Kawibe. He says PMB is a grassroots politician. The defection will hardly make any impact for his success. Thank you for all your responses there. Keep it Africa Link.
Well, in case you just joined us, you are listening to DW's Africa Link program. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And my name is Abubakar Jallo. And a big shout out to all of you who are listening to us on our Facebook page, DW Africa, especially you there, Mariam Abdullah Yahaya.
So welcome to the program, because we have a lot lined up for you. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, Germany claims its migrant returnee centers in Africa have been very, very successful. Well, we find out from a center in Ghana.
They are embracing our services very well because, you know, what we do is we offer a 360 degrees counseling. So we really take their cases serious, listen to them. We want to offer our tailor-made services.
And we told the migration backlash in Germany after the international football star Mesut Ozil decided to resign. We head to France to see what this Football World Cup means for integration for them.
And before all that, we have much more lined up for you, as you heard. But first, we head to Kenya, where residents of Kenya's biggest slums in Kibera have reacted angrily to the government's forceful evictions that have left at least 30,000 people homeless after their houses were demolished. The Kenyan government intends to construct a link road worth $19 million to ease traffic congestion in capital Nairobi.
However, Amnesty International has accused the government of going back on a deal to delay construction of the road pending an agreement with the locals. Andrew Wasike with more.
Residents watch in despair as big cranes and bulldozers brought down the place they have long called home. In fact, many had nowhere to go and had to spend the night in the cold. Seven schools and community projects for youth vocational training were not spared either. The road is expected to ease the perennial traffic jams in Nairobi. The government maintains the demolitions will go on as part of its plan to build new roads and railways in its 2030 vision program. But for residents here, like 55-year-old Mary Wamboi, the pain is too much to bear. She says she has not received any assistance, be it food, shelter, or even water.
No one has come to help me. I have not received any assistance. I don't even know where to go. I just have to wrap up the few belongings I have salvaged and put them on the roadside. That is where I plan to stay. I can't say that I will move somewhere because I don't have friends or family who I can go to. I'm alone since my husband died in 2007.
Like Wambui, Adan Waso is counting losses.
My house used to be there. I heard rumors in the morning before I left for work that there would be demolitions. The bulldozer came around 7 a.m. When I came back in the evening, I found that I no longer had a home.
The government has maintained that there will be no compensation because the structures were illegal, but the Kenya National Commission on Human Rights accuses it of not respecting the residents and following the due process before evictions. Vice Chair George Morara explains.
The statistics from Kibera are very worrying. The sheer destruction and the sheer disruption that is actually being occasioned is completely unconscionable. It's not acceptable. If Kura is telling us that is government land, as I said earlier, nobody's saying no, that's not government land. The people who are living there are also Kenyan people. The greatest resource we have in this country, in as much as that road is important, it's not that road, but it's the citizens of this country.
As residents come to terms with their losses, many decry they all lost their source of livelihoods, like Anya Boke, whose grocery store was demolished.
I'm just asking, what is our government's stance on this? Does it care about our rights? Does it care about us who are poor and destitute? Is the God that we pray to even looking at this divide between the rich and the poor? I pray that God helps us. I don't even know what else to say.
A Kibera resident, they are being very disappointed with the demolition process. And that report was compiled by Andrew Wasike.
And Sophie Heritage says these things called governments in Africa are a source of grave danger to the survival of their own. Where were the so-called government when people were putting up permanent structures in this place?
Africa on the move.
And now the German government continues to roll out initiatives in Africa aimed at ending illegal migration. by young people and discouraging them from embarking on dangerous journeys to Europe.
Now, this initiative is also aimed at encouraging migrants in Germany to return home and rebuild their lives. In Ghana, a center was inaugurated last year to push this agenda. Isaac Kalechi in Accra visited the center to report on the progress so far.
Invitation on the website of the embassy, printed the information.
I have just walked into a meeting room where a migration expert is engaging a migrant returnee seeking to rebuild his life. The engagement is taking place in this facility housing the German Ghana Migration Reintegration Center in Accra. It was commissioned last year by Germany's President Frank-Walter Steinmeier during a visit to Ghana.
Everyone thinks traveling outside to have a greener pastures is the best thing. But to now, this center is available.
Derek Adamson is 28 years and lived in Germany for 4 years illegally. He found it difficult to prolong his stay due to lack of proper documentation. So when he heard about the migration center on local TV, he decided to take the opportunity.
Traveling outside the country without the right document is a different part. And to get a document in Germany, you have to take through the right process, but we didn't have the documents. So I had a story. Ghanaians, if you're in Germany and stuff, if it's not going well for you, you can return back home. So I had a story and I go back home.
Adamson is now being assisted to set up his own business and he is excited about the prospects of what he is doing now. It is a great relief to him and his family.
I got back and I was trained. I went to a coaching school of entrepreneurship and also having a coach from GIZ for a full 1 year to know how to work very well, not to make a mistake, and they would direct me in my financial and my business. And it's not like I used to work before, work with no ideas, but this time I know how to make a business plan and I know how to establish myself very well.
For 2018 alone, the center has counseled 3,000 migrants. 750 of them were assisted online, 1,800 on phone, and 450 face-to-face within the program's offices in Accra. All of them are assessed based on their needs and are assisted to get back on their feet. Benjamin Wostin, Regional Advisor for Ghana and Nigeria on the Migration for Development Program, tells me the returnees have been forthcoming.
They are embracing our services very well because, you know, what we do is we offer a 360 degrees counseling. So we really take their cases serious, listen to them, evaluate their situation, their needs, their demands. And up on this assessment, we want to offer our tailor-made services. And the people really appreciate that.
The center has held 6 outreach programs in the first quarter of this year, 715 institutional-based audiences sensitized. TV and radio appearances have been made to send a message to young people hoping to return home and those thinking of migrating abroad. The migration center may be just about a year old, but the impact seems to be significant. With intensified activities, hopefully, it should become a haven for those young people, many of whom are in the state of confusion about rebuilding their lives after embarking on the dangerous journey through the Sahara Desert and the Mediterranean Sea.
And as you just heard, Germany has been claiming that its migrant returnee centers have been very successful. Isaac Kalechi compiled that report.
Yeah, so it's actually a mix, so as we had in that report. And of course, you have also been giving us your reactions on that. And we start off with one user who sent us a WhatsApp comment from Ngozi, Nigeria.
These people who have gone out, these people who have more or less seen it all, need to come back home and do the same thing, help us to do the same thing in Africa. That way, we'll reduce movement of people from Africa or least developed countries to more developed countries, and then grow the economy.
Thanks a lot, Ngozi.
Focus Europe.
Now let's turn your attention back to Europe for a little bit, shall we? A huge backlash has gripped Germany after the international football star Mesut Ozil decided to quit. This has sparked a debate of racism in the country. But in France, the situation is different. As the country continues to savour its World Cup victory, the nation's football team is turning around old and negative stereotypes about immigrants and integration.
A poll just out also shows the win has boosted the morale of the French. Nearly two-thirds say they're optimistic, up from just about 40% 6 months ago. But can this sense of euphoria and national unity really last? Lisa Bryant reports from Paris.
The French team's 4-2 victory over Croatia marks the first time the country has won the World Cup in 20 years. Fatoumata Kebe joined the millions celebrating on the streets of France. Kebe comes from Guinea, but now has French nationality. Today, she says, she's proud to be French.
I live in France. I'm French. My family lives in France. We're all here and we're all feeling happy.
It seems like a throwback to 1998, the last time France won the World Cup. That team was nicknamed Black Blanc Beurre, black, white, and North African. But the sense of social and racial unity two decades ago proved ephemeral. In 2005, there was nationwide rioting by ethnic immigrant youth from poor towns protesting police brutality. Then the spate of homegrown terrorist attacks, largely carried out by youngsters from North and sub-Saharan African backgrounds, and the rising popularity of France's far right.
On a une équipe jeune.
We have a young, ethnically mixed soccer team, which mostly comes from working-class backgrounds. They represent the face of a French youth which has been viewed with hostility for a number of years. They're seen as not being attached to France, as representing a danger and the country's ruin.
Dominique Sopo is president of anti-discrimination group SOS Racisme. He notes many team members come from gritty suburbs, known here as banlieue, towns cut off from a more affluent France, not just physically through lack of public transportation, but also symbolically and psychologically.
In some ways, youngsters from these banlieues feel they don't belong in places like Paris, and that's something we need to think about.
Sport can help erase these barriers, at least for those who make it. France's soccer team met with Emmanuel Macron, but critics say the French president hasn't done enough for the other youngsters Sopo is talking about. In May, Macron rejected a massive overhaul plan for the banlieue, settling for more modest measures. And like many countries in Europe, France is cracking down on immigration. Still, Education Minister Jean-Michel Blanquer believes the picture is brighter than critics claim. Integration, he told French radio, is not stalling.
L'intégration fonctionne plutôt bien. Elle fonctionne pas.
It's actually going pretty well. It's not perfect, but you have about 70 to 80% of people who come from immigrant backgrounds who are doing well. They're rising socially, and their kids have academic degrees, which they never got.
Sopo of SOS Racisme agrees there is another face of immigration in France. It's les Bleus.
Là, on a l'expression de cette jeunesse.
Here we see the expression of youth who are victorious, who are likable, who aren't tortured by identity questions, and seem to be at ease with their origins and being French.
But he doubts this positive identity will last unless political leaders and French society build on it.
Lisa Bryant compiled that report in Paris, France.
And Josiah Pope, commenting on that, says thanks to the people of France for proving to the world that there is power in diversity.
And the final one from Joe Black, he says thanks France for giving opportunities to our African brothers to present their talent to the world.
Thank you. And continue commenting on DW Africa. I'm Zipporah Nyambura.
And my name is Abubakar Jalo. Until tomorrow, bye now.